Chapter 9. Reacher checked the window. There were 4 tires in total, big, knobbly off-road things, all of them on a Ford pickup truck. The truck had a jacked suspension and lights on a roof bar and a snorkel air intake and a winch on the front. There were 2 large shapes in the gloom inside. The shapes had thick necks and huge shoulders. The truck nosed slowly down the row of cabins and stopped 20 feet behind the parked Subaru. The headlights stayed on, the engine idled, the doors opened, 2 guys climbed out. They both looked like Brett, only bigger. Late 20s, easily 6'6 or 6'7, probably close to 300 pounds each. Big waists made tiny by huge chests and arms and shoulders. They had cropped hair and small eyes and fleshy faces. They were the kind of guys who ate 2 dinners and were still hungry afterward. They were wearing red Cornhuskers football jackets made gray by the blue light from the cabin's eaves. The doctor's wife joined Reacher at the window.
"Sweet Jesus," she said.
Reacher said nothing. The 2 guys closed the truck's doors and stepped back in unison to the load bed and unlatched a tool locker bolted across its width behind the cab. They lifted the lid, and one took out an engineer's ball-peen hammer, and the other took out a 2-headed wrench, at least 1.5 feet long. They left the lid open and walked forward into the truck's headlight wash, and their shadows jumped ahead of them. They were light on their feet and nimble for their size, like football players usually were. They paused for a moment and looked at the cabin's door, and then they turned away, toward the Subaru. They attacked it in a violent frenzy, an absolute blitzkrieg, 2 or 3 minutes of uncontrolled smashing and pounding. The noise was deafening. They smashed every shard of glass out of the windshield. They smashed the side windows, the back window, the headlights, the taillights. They hammered jagged dents into the hood, into the doors, into the roof, into the fenders, into the tailgate. They put their arms through the absent glass and smashed up the dials and the switches and the radio. Shit, Reacher thought. There goes my ride.
My husband's punishment, the doctor's wife whispered. Worse this time.
The 2 guys stopped as suddenly as they had started. They stood there, one on each side of the wrecked wagon, and they breathed hard and rolled their shoulders and let their weapons hang down by their sides. Pebbles of broken automotive glass glittered in the neon, and the boom and clang of battered sheet metal echoed away to absolute silence. Reacher took off his coat and dumped it on the bed. The 2 guys formed up, shoulder to shoulder, and headed for the cabin's door. Reacher opened it up and stepped out to meet them head on. Win or lose, fighting inside would bust up the room, and Vincent, the motel owner, had enough problems already. The 2 guys stopped 10 feet away and stood there, side by side, symmetrical, their weapons in their outside hands, 4 cubic yards of bone and muscle, 600 pounds of beef, all flushed and sweating in the chill. Reacher said, "Pop quiz, guys. You spent 4 years in college learning how to play a game. I spent 13 years in the army learning how to kill people. So how scared am I?" No answer. "And you were so bad at it you couldn't even get drafted afterward." "I was so good at it I got all kinds of medals and promotions." "So how scared are you?"
"Not very," said the guy with the wrench.
Wrong answer, but understandable. Being a good enough guard or tackle in high school to get a full boat free ride to the big school in Lincoln was no mean achievement. Playing even a cameo role on the field in Memorial Stadium made a guy close to the best of the best. And failing to make the National Football League was no kind of real disgrace. The dividing line between success and failure in the world of sports was often very narrow, and the reasons for falling on one side or the other were often very arbitrary. These guys had been the elite for most of 20 years, the greatest thing their neighborhood had ever seen, then their town, then their county, maybe their state. They had been popular. They had been feted. They had gotten the girls. And they probably hadn't lost a fight since they were 8 years old. Except they had never had a fight. Not in the sense meant by people paid to fight or die. Pushing and shoving at the schoolyard gate, or on the sidewalk outside the soda shop, or late at night after a start of summer keg party, was as far from fighting as two fat guys tossing lame spirals in the park were from the Super Bowl. These guys were amateurs, and worse, they were complacent amateurs, accustomed to getting by on bulk and reputation alone. In the real world, they would be dead before they even landed a blow. Case in point, bad choice of weapons. Best are shooting weapons. Second best are stabbing weapons. Third best are slashing weapons. Blunt instruments are way down the list. They slow hand speed. Their uncontrolled momentum is disadvantageous after a miss. And if you have to use them, the backhand is the only way to go, so that you accelerate and strike in the same sudden, fluid motion. But these guys were shoulder to shoulder with their weapons in their outer hands, which promised forehand swings, which meant that the hammer or the wrench would have to be swung backward first, then stopped, then brought forward again. The first part of the move would be a clear telegraph. All the warning in the world. No surprise. They might as well put a notice in the newspaper, or send a cable by Western Union. Reacher smiled. He had been raised on military bases all around the world, battling hardcore Marine progeny, honing his skills against gangs of resentful native youths in dusty Pacific streets and damp European alleys. Whatever hardscrabble town in Texas or Arkansas or Nebraska these guys had come up in had been a feather bed by comparison. And while they had been studying the playbook and learning to run and jump and catch, he had been broken down and built back up by the kind of experts who could snap your neck so fast you never knew it had happened until you went to nod your head and it rolled away down the street without you. The guy with the wrench said, "We've got a message for you, pal." Reacher said, "Really?" "Actually, it's more of a question." "Any difficult words? You need more time?" Reacher stepped forward and a little to his right. He put himself directly in front of the two guys, equidistant 7 feet away, so that if he was 6 on a clock face, they were 11 and 1. The guy with the wrench was on his left and the guy with the hammer was on his right.